So here, Mairana Permians. It's amazing that in high energy physics, people have been talking about Mairana Permians since the time of Mairana. But I don't think there is no elementary particle which are Mairana Permians. There is some guess that neutrinos are. But in condensed matter now we have a lot of realization and it's a very active field. I think there are very hard experimental proofs now that localized Mairana zero modes exist. Already you had Emily's discussion, Ising model in a transverse field. Anyway, okay. So I will continue with what I left last time. Last time I was trying to motivate Ginzburg-Landau theory and also Landau's theory of phase transition using a mathematical technique which was there and also invented by Hubbard and Stratonovich. Basically, you have in many body systems, you have interacting electrons or interacting bosons. So it's a two body interaction which leads to problem. So in the past, we used to do simple Hartree-Fock theory. Imagine that I am an electron, I'm moving around. I see some average field due to the rest of the neighbors and then take that into account, what is called a Hartree-Fock approximation, and then calculate itself consistently. That's the beginning of Hartree-Fock approximation. Then it turns out it can be done more formally because it is true that an electron is feeling a mean field, but depending on the situation, the mean field can be very strongly fluctuating quantum mechanically. So there should be some way of organizing it mathematically. That is where this Hubbard-Stratonovich transformations and various things come. But even well before that, Landau envisaged the following. He said that suppose I have a system which is trying to undergo a phase transition, then it is true, like if I take a ferromagnet, the individual spins try to order cooperatively and then they are fluctuating thermally, let us say. While the fluctuations can be very large if I focus on a single spin, if I consider a volume related to some characteristic length scale, the fluctuations in that volume may be much less. So I can define coarse-grained spins, spins averaged over some volume, and then use it as a meaningful variable. That is where the notion of order parameter came. So order parameter comes whenever there is a tendency for order in the system. And these orders are very easily described for ferromagnet or antiferromagnet. And when it comes to superfluid order or superconductor order, the order parameter is a little more subtle. But however, people like London and Landau and Ginzburg recognized that this is something to do with phase that we are familiar with in quantum mechanics of wave functions. So that is the motivation. So I was trying to illustrate it by using Hubbard-Stratonovich identity for Ising model, because that also will illustrate many things very clearly. So you remember the identity. I also encourage students to look at the paper by Hubbard-Stratonovich. It's a very short, crisp paper which uses in the modern language called path integral technique, but he just writes down the final result with some skippings and many things. It has been extensively used in the recent past in quantum condensed matter and other problems. Okay. So the idea is to use basically this identity . So, for example, if I am interested in superfluidity, you remember that if I look at the Hamiltonian, it involves some attractive interaction between electron at a particular point. So this is what makes the problem hard. So it's quartic in the field variables. So if I can make it quadratic, then I can do some analysis. I can do mean field theory and so on. That's what this identity tells you. It says that exponential of a square can be written as exponential of a, but coupled to some auxiliary field x, which has its own measure, and then integrated over all the thing. So this is the basic idea. So you could have interacting fermions, or interacting bosons, or interacting spins. When you have interacting fermions, as Hubbard shows, you have to be a little careful when you do this, because when you do the trace, often we do trace with respect to the eigenbasis, but we can convert it into path integrals. Then you will have to be careful and introduce time order. That is, suppose I have a Hamiltonian operator and I have a trace. This is a many body Hamiltonian. Then I take trace over Fock states, for example. And also, it's known that you can rewrite it in terms of path integral for fermions in terms of Grassmann variables, or path integrals in terms of complex variables for bosons. Then you have to introduce time ordering of the Hamiltonian. So normally what you do is schematically write it saying that, okay, there are some fermions about which I am integrating, and then I am introducing time ordering and do this. So I had no time here in this, just it was trace over operator. Now I do the usual path integral trick of thinking about this beta as a time interval in imaginary axis, and then splitting into small interval, then introducing complete set of states, and they end up this. And Hubbard, Stratonovich identity is used in linearizing here, not at the level of operators in the Hamiltonian. So all these complications are not there for the thing that I'm going to do, because it's already a classical spin problem. Namely, I'm interested in solving this is the trace that I'm interested in calculating, famous Ising model problem. And this sum was done by Ansager for, evaluated exactly by Ansager for two-dimensional problem. Now, we cannot do it for three-dimension, but however, we can make lots of approximation. It is here this identity becomes very useful. This is what I was doing last time. So I generally wrote a general expression that exponential of half, I'm sticking to the notation of the book that I saw. So I have a coupling between two spins, I and J. In general, we pick up nearest neighbors, the standard model. But it could be oscillatory and long-range and so on. So let's keep it as general. And then half factor is because I'm summing it twice. So these are all. So this is a trace that I would like to do. And this trace is, in general, very difficult to do. So what you do is introduce auxiliary field variable. Exactly the same thing. Apply to many variables. So I encourage you to just redo this, and you will find that it is very simple form. So it's a multidimensional integral over phi, which is a real scalar going from minus infinity to plus infinity for every site. Then you have ii kij plus sij. So what is remarkable is that you have bilinear in spin variable. Here you have linear in spin variable. However, it is coupled to a field phi from neighbors, which has its own probability distribution or own measure. So it is essentially bringing in the concept of mean field. That is, an active spin in this representation is seeing some fluctuating field whose value goes from minus infinity to plus infinity. This is where a beautiful thing comes. The original spin is a discrete variable, plus or minus 1. But physically, if you look at large N of area, I can imagine normalizing the total spin and making it go from some minus, yeah.
Can you explain, like, intuitively how, like, the comparison between this approximation and the Vogel-Leopold approximation we made, where it was like we have such a large ground state that we can treat this as like a macroscopic system, like this kind of approximation versus here where it's a bit different?
So I'm going to do that. So that is the idea here. So here we can see how those approximations come out. I will first do the simplest mean field theory in this, where, then I'm not doing it for quantum case, I'm doing it for classical spins, but then quantum case, it's very similar, provided you do path ordering of the Hamiltonian and do integration over field variables. So here the field variable corresponding to the spin is phi I. So in the case of superconductor, the field variable corresponding to Cooper pair operator will be some complex order parameter. In the case of bosons, it will be some Bose condensed order parameter. In the case of spin density, it will be some spin density waves and so on. So let me illustrate this first, and then we can. So I have a trace. Now this trace can be trivially performed because I have a product over I exponential. So then once I do that, then I'm left with exponential of minus half . So I will get product over all I cosh kij phi j. And normally what you do, you exponentiate it and rewrite it as this cosh as e to the power of sum over log cosh . That's it. So the spins have been eliminated in from the problem. Now what you have is a field theory. You have a field theory of real scalar field, which varies from minus infinity to plus infinity. Already you can start seeing 5-4 field theory in this form. Because what do you have? You have, if you have nearest neighbor coupling, then what you have is phi I coupled to neighbors phi j. So I can imagine expanding if you have a smooth configuration of phi and then expanding in gradients of phi. Then the leading term will be del grad square. And then there will be some phi square coming from here. And then when you expand this, you will get phi square plus some lambda phi to the power of 4 in the coarse grained sense. So this is what I'm going to get from here. At the moment, there are everything is lattice variable. Now, this is where one can do in many ways. One approach is to go to momentum space, because these phis are field variables which are defined in real space. You can think of them as Euclidean path integral. Now, since we look at systems with long wavelength variations and fluctuations and so on, it's good to go to momentum space, which is what we do. When we do that, you can Fourier transform. That is, what you do is you define a phi of q, which is related to Ri, where Ri is the position of the site. So you define field. And then when you do that, because of momentum conservation, because of translation invariance, you will get some phi q square term. And in general, this will be very complicated, because this is highly nonlinear function of phi. But if you truncate it at some value, then you will get a pi 4 field theory. But before I do that, I want to introduce the mean field theory that we normally do with Bogoliubov theory or Hartree-Fock theory. So what do I want to do? I know that if I am at sufficiently low temperature, if I am in 3-dimension, there is going to be a spontaneous order. So that means this integral, when I look at it long length scale, will be saturated by those configurations in which these phis do not vary spatially, uniform value of phi. And then I can try to see approximate this integral by an integral in which there is no spatial variation of phi, and then find out if there is an optimal value of that. And that is a mean field theory. What you do is, you think about this as a saddle point approximation. That is, what you do is, you look at the whatever is there in the exponential, the action, and then look at it as phi square k. If suppose you have z neighbors, it will be kz by kt. So that will be the term from here. Then you will have some phi square term, and then phi to the power of 4 term and higher order term. So you ignore the higher order terms. Or even in a simpler way, you keep it in this form, then what you have is you have a log of cos some k z some mean field phi, which you are going to determine self-consistently. So what have I done? I have taken this functional form for complicated multidimensional integral, and then I assume that the phi's do not have spatial variation, so I call them as phi naught square. Then I have an action in which the field phi is uniform in space, the lattice action. Now I can look for the minimum of this. And then lo and behold, when you do the minimum of this, you will find phi naught is equal to tan hyperbolic phi naught z k by kt. This you recognize as a well-known Weiss mean field theory result. So why do I get tan hyperbolic? Because I have log cos. Cos, when I minimize it, look for the optimum value of phi naught, because I minimize this free energy functional. This derivative will give me linear term, and this will give me tan hyperbolic. Cos will come down and sin hyperbolic, and you will get eventually this. This we usually derive by using a simple Ising spin. So what? How do we normally get this? You say that I have to do this model, then I replace the spin, interaction of the spin with the neighboring z neighbors like this, a mean field M. So this is my mean field density matrix with the corresponding of a single site. Then I calculate the average value of the spin variable in this mean field density matrix, and then I get this. This is the self-consistent equation. So you can also get it by minimizing this action. So this is as far as uniform or mean field value is concerned. But in reality, you are interested in situations where there are domain walls, where there are effects of change in order parameter, the boundary, due to various causes. So you want you are interested in that's where you actually go to order parameter theory, which contains spatial variation. So what did Landau do? Landau basically said that I can, putting it with hindsight, you can go to momentum space variable and then look at long wavelength fluctuations, and whatever we did here will become slightly more complicated. There will be already I showed you the these two terms already you could get from here. Then the fact that if I take a ferromagnet, which has, if I twist the order, if I change the local order, there will be a resistance to that. So it should be independent of which way I took. So from symmetry argument, the energy I spent in deforming the magnetization should be proportional to gradient m square. So this was Landau's famous argument in a simple mean field theory for. So this should be the free energy density of a ferromagnet characterized by just four parameters. A, which is related to stiffness, and then B, which is related to whether I am above phase transition point or below phase transition point, so the TC, and then some lambda, a nonlinearity. This essentially says that if I draw this part of the free energy, say famous textbook example, if I plot free energy as a function of the mean field, above transition temperature, this will be positive. I have a locally quadratic. Then when I go to large M, it becomes steeper. Then if I am temperature below transition temperature, then it's there is a local minimum, maximum, and then it's pulled back by pi to the power of 4 term. So this is the free energy expression in Landau's theory. Very simple. Nothing can be simpler. So what Landau said was, if I tune temperature, the at some point, the coefficient of m square term will change sign and there will be a spontaneous symmetry break. And if I follow the minimum as a function of temperature, you will get the famous behavior. So all these things follow from Landau's chronological theory, assuming a very simple expression for free energy. And you can rationalize this expression now microscopically using all these arguments. Now, what is remarkable is it goes beyond this argument, can be made more powerful, and you can start finding how the system responds for local magnetic field. For example, here I have assumed that there is no external magnetic field, everything is spontaneous. Then, in fact, I remember yesterday someone asked a question, what will happen if there is a magnetic field? So the behavior will be this magnetization below the transition temperature as a function of external magnetic field, you will have a discontinuous jump. That is the spirit of spontaneous symmetry break. So, because the system doesn't know where to which to choose, but a small help from external magnetic field can put it here or there. Okay. So, that is the very simple, so that's a motivation for introducing this functional integral. Now, using this functional integral, you can calculate every coefficient very accurately by doing gradient expansion or going to momentum space, then pick. So I should maybe point it out. So since I have written it down here, I will. How do I get those coefficients? For example, if I look at this term, phi I k I j, by j, in the language of momentum space, then I will have phi q k of q phi q because of translation invariance. Now, k of q, if you consider a simple cubic lattice, will be cosine of q alpha a alpha 1 to d. Suppose I have nearest neighbor coupling and I have and then k just talks to only neighbors, then when you do it, I'm in d dimension, I will have sum over this cosine. And we know that cosine for zero momentum can be written as 1 plus q square and so on. So when you do that, basically you get a q square term phi q phi q for long wavelength. When you rewrite it in real space, that's basically gradient term, because you can go to phi q as a continuous variable in real space, and then q square becomes gradient whole square. So you can get the coefficient of the stiffness from this formula formally. Similarly, you can get the lambda term by expanding the log cos term, because it is this which leads to nonlinearity, self-coupling among the fields. So that will give you phi square, phi to the power of 4. So you stop at phi 4. And then already that's accurate to get qualitative picture. So this is the spirit of this Hubbard-Sutton-Lewis identity. And so for I'm doing it for a classical case. Now I can do it for a now. What are the things that I can do with classical case? For example, I may be interested in a situation in which I have domains, because if you take a ferromagnet, as you all know, it's very difficult to get rid of domains, because domains are created. The process of magnetization, the process of preparing a system, and so on. So I want to understand the shape of the domain. I want to understand the dynamics around the domain. Then I can use the same Landau's theory and get, for example, a characteristic thickness of the domain wall just from these parameters. then I can go one step further. So far, I'm doing equilibrium statistical mechanics. There is no time dynamics. But however, I know that in reality, I can perturb the system with some periodic signal or time-dependent signal. I should be able to find out the response of the system as a function of time. So I can, at the level of phenomenology, I can phenomenologically introduce time derivative here. So for example, I will say, nothing prevents me by having a term like this. It says that if I have a local magnetization and I try to change with time, there is a resistance to it. And in fact, there is a whole field in magnetism called Landau-Gilbert Gilbert equation, where time dependence of this order parameter is phenomenologically put using Maxwell's equation, because finally it is external vector potential and magnetic field which disturbs couples to the magnetization. So you can do all those things. So that's the starting point I've just indicated. Now I wanted to, in the next step, I want to talk a little bit about superconductor and a topological defect, namely vertices, and then go back to what I plan to do, because this is something very important, I believe. We all know about quantized vertices, because, for example, electron moment, angular momentum is quantized, because it's an elementary particle, very light particle. And so is the angular momentum of a Cooper pair in a superconductor, because it's in a Bose condensed state, all of them behave in the same way. So there is flux quantization, which you already saw that. Now, if you take so-called Ginzburg-Landau theory, which is very much like what I did here. So in the case of a ferromagnet, I said that I look at a small volume and look at the net magnetization and treat that as a dynamical variable, and then write down a phenomenological free energy functional, and I can get a lot. So before Cooper pair theory came, Ginzburg and Landau said that I will write down a phenomenological free energy for superconductor, and I don't know what the order parameter is, but I know from the work of Bogoliubov and from the work of London and so on, it is something to do with order in momentum space. It is something to do with condensation in momentum space of a density of particles. And you know, in the case of Bose condensation, as shown by Bogoliubov, Bose condensation, there is a conjugate relation between number operator and the phase operator. So somehow, Landau and Ginzburg realized that the order parameter that describes the order in a superconductor should be described by a complex number. This was a great intuition, because they had no reason to do that. They said, I am going to discuss superconductivity. Nobody told me what is the order parameter at that time. They said, it's going to be a complex number. It has a modulus and a phase. And the meaning of this was later got by various people, BCS theory, Bogoliubov, Gorko. Yeah, yes. Oh yeah. So you remember, in the case of Bogoliubov theory, we replaced by some C number. So that C number is alpha dagger alpha. So you can think about the C number as, and then it turns out this alpha, a formal way of doing is square root A. You know, A dagger A is number operator. So a formally, I think you can write it as some operator like this. Then you can justify it for large value of n. So this cannot be justified when n is close to 1 and 2 and so on for the ground state of a harmonic oscillator. But if in a highly excited state, this can be justified, and you can show that this phi and n obey canonical commutation relation. So this is the number phase uncertainty which I briefly indicated last time. I said wherever zero momentum operator comes, we replace it by a C number. Now this is a number operator where in Bogoliubov theory or in a superfluid is a macroscopic number. So that means I can replace this A naught by a real number times a phase. This is a phase I'm talking about. So this is for the entire system in the mean field theory. What Landau and Ginzburg said was that I look at a small volume, which is not microscopic, which is mesoscopic, and then define some coarse-grained order parameter, which is a complex number, which is called the macroscopic wave function. Now, that macroscopic free energy density, Ginzburg and Landau motivated, essentially by writing down a similar, to say that this is equal to okay. Now, at the moment, I am assuming that these Cooper pairs are not coupled to the vector potential. I will couple it very soon. So, just by borrowing analogy from ferroelectricity or ferromagnets, Landau said that the free energy will have a term which optimizes finite value of psi, which attains finite value of psi below Tc. I can get it from a pi 4 theory like this. And also, I will have a term which will resist spatial deformation of the order parameter, spatial variation of the order parameter. This is the simplest thing I can do. Sorry?
Why the gradient?
Oh, sorry. No, I should have. Okay. Sorry. So, because, for example, in quantum mechanics, what is the meaning of kinetic energy? Kinetic energy says that if I distort the wave function, the energy will go up. The momentum locally will increase. That is same here in superconducting, you say if you distort the wave function, energy will go up. If you introduce a phase variation, there will be local current and it will increase the energy. That's the statement. But what is interesting is they put Planck's constant here. Whereas in the case of ferromagnet, Planck's constant did not appear. It's some material parameter. Here Planck's constant appeared. So, and this is where the famous Mexican hat also comes now. Because now this is the potential of the superconductor. Potential as a function of the order parameter for psi. Now, this order parameter is mod square mod to the power of 4. So, if I were to draw it, in the previous case I had just a scalar variable. Now, I will have a angular variable, and this minimum will be the same in every angle. So that's where the Mexican hat comes. I can't draw a Mexican hat clearly, but somebody from Mexico can draw it. So the idea is that you can rotate that phi square term, and then it will generate a circle, which is the minimum. Now you can condense in with any value of phi. So that's where the, so in the case of ferromagnet, icing ferromagnet that I discussed, all the spins can be up or down. Here, the superconducting order parameter can take any one of the direction in the phase space, which is 2 pi, between 0 and 2 pi. So this is a degeneracy. And this remained a mysterious thing for a long time till Josephson effect was discovered. But it came mathematically in Ginzburg-Landau theory, as well as in BCS theory. Okay. Now, what I am going to do is, I know that in the superconductor, Cooper pairs are charged. So, I have, then how do I couple external magnetic field, for example, simple external magnetic field to the order parameter? It was Ginzburg-Landau who said that I will do exactly the way that I will do so, but they were very careful. They had no idea what was the charge that you had to associate with the the Cooper pair. They put at E star, some effective charge. So, they say that this is the way an electron will feel, external magnetic field, external vector potential. Now, with hindsight, we can say this will be 2e, because what is feeling this external vector potential is a Cooper pair condensate, and Cooper pairs carry charge 2e. So, this is the term that will be there. So, this is the way external vector potential couples to Cooper pair condensate. This was again a phenomenological statement. Now, this again has a profound consequence. Now, if you follow this free energy and push it further, and you find that, like the way you had for a ferromagnet, a simple domain wall. What is a domain wall? Suppose I have a sample, then if all spins are up in this direction, in this down, then there is a characteristic length over which this magnetization will vary. This characteristic length is determined by various parameters. So, this is called a topological defect, because you cannot destroy this domain wall unless you push half the spins. So, it is topologically protected unless you push the domain wall to the boundary. The same way Ginsberg, Landau, thanks to the work by Abrikosov and so on, they realized that this defines quantized vertices, because what is analog of phase analog of magnetization variation? Here the analog will be phase variation. So, imagine you have a superconductor in a plane, the circular boundary, then I rotate, I locally here I have the phase phi equal to 0, here I have the phase phi equal to pi, I continuously rotate it, there won't be much energy gain. But then, however, when I come to the middle, there will be a singularity, because I don't know what to do with the phase, because the phase gently, so this is a topological defect. So, the phase varies continuously from 0 as I go around to 2 pi. So, that is an allowed variation, because the wave function remains continuous, but then I have a singularity at the origin. Now, if you put numbers, what kind of vector potential will lead to this, you will find flux quantization. Again, I am not doing it, I am just leaving it there. So, the important point I wanted to message I wanted to give here, just take Ginsberg-Landau theory and find out the location of the vertex, for example, create a vertex, and what you find is self-consistently the order parameter develops a dip. So, this physically the following, that is, when I have a quantized vertex, I have circulating current, which are whose angular moment is quantized. When I come to the core of the current, core of the cell, then the nonlinear interaction among the condensate depletes some condensate. So, I have a small region of normal state. This just follows from Ginsberg-Landau theory, and this has profound consequences, because when you do this, for example, for a P wave superconductor, this traps a Majorana mode. This is a beautiful thing, I will leave it as an exercise. So, because when I have a superconductor, when I do some disturbance, I am removing superconductivity, I am suppressing, then what will happen? There will be normal electrons. So, that is not contained in this theory. Now, in fact, you will have to go one step before above, that is called Gorkov theory. That is, in this theory, fermions are absent, it is focusing on the Cooper pair condensate alone. But however, you know that if you go to the boundary where the order parameter will vanish, fermions will come up. So, you have to bring in fermions, that can be gotten from theories involving Abbott Chatrowich identity or Gorkov theory, which is, goes beyond Bogoliubov theory and couples the fermion with the order parameter. That is a very important step. So, I just wanted to point out is that the beautiful thing, it was recognized by Marticoni and Dijon and others, that if you look at a vertex, there are bound states of normal particles in the vertex. So, the vertex which carries a core of normal particle acts like a potential and it binds some quasi particles, and that has been experimentally seen. And in the case of P wave superconductor, this quasi particle gets bound exactly at the origin of the energy. So, that is a zero mode. So, it is neither a positive energy state nor a zero energy state, becomes a Majorana fermion. So, this, if you are interested, you can look at it in the discussion session. So, that is why vertices are topological, so they are important, they are used for qubits and so on. On top of that, vortices in some situations like a p-wave superconductor can support a quantized zero Majorana mode, which is a mysterious thing. And it has been experimentally, I will not go into the story. If there is some interest, I can explain it later. Okay. Yes. Yeah, exactly. So suppose I take a superconductor. Now, deep in the bulk, there is pairing going on, and there is a uniform order parameter. Suppose I come to the surface of a superconducting grain. So as I go to the surface, the electrons feel different environment. They see, get scattered from the surface. So the electron phonon interaction will be reduced. So in general, you anticipate depletion of order parameter. And in particular, if you come out of the crystal, there is no order parameter, right? Because I have a lead grain, so there is superconductivity. So as I approach, in general, I will find out exponential decay of the order parameter. And that is a characteristic length, which is related to so-called Cooper pair size or coherence length. I am not going into the phenomenology of that. So in the same way, when you create a vortex, you are forcing a normal region inside a superconductor because of circulating current. Because when I am far away, the circulating current has very little effect. But when I come to the core of the vortex, the circulating current disturbs self-consistently the condensate and creates a normal state. So all these words follow if you do a minimization of Ginzburg-Landau free energy, the presence of a vortex. Yeah, exactly. So you take this with the vector potential and then impose a quantized field and then self-consistently minimize this energy in the presence of the field, you will find that the order parameter psi develops this minimum. Sorry, I don't have time to go into the details.
What is the axis of this graph
provide? Sorry?
What are the axes? Like the y-axis is the magnitude of the phase?
Oh, yeah, this order parameter.
Yeah, yeah, but what is the...
x-axis.
Yeah.
Space. So I walk like this.
It's the size of the... It's the
yeah. So I have strong superconductivity, gets depleted when I cross the... So this is the nominal location of the vortex. Even though it's a topological object, its feeling is everywhere because even when I am far away, if I go around, I'll find quantized angular momentum or circulating current. But there is a notion of center of the vortex. And that center of the vortex carries some normal core region. And that normal core region, under some condition, can become a Majorana zero mode. I just wanted to indicate that. So if some of you are interested, you can... I can give you the, there is a beautiful work by Ivanov, I don't remember the reference, who proved it for p-wave superconductor, and that's what started the game of topological quantum, because it turns out if you create a Majorana mode, this Majorana mode behaves like a semion. When you exchange them, the wave function doesn't change sign, it acquires a factor of I. That's a mysterious thing about Majorana phenomenon. I will indicate it later in some context. Whereas if you have, yes.
The defect is like this, the semiconductor is three dimensions and the defect is two dimensions?
Yeah, sorry, I should have mentioned. I'm looking at two-dimensional superconductor.
Ah, okay.
Planar superconductor. So then the physics is very different. In fact, things continue. For example, if you take helium-3 superfluid, there are these vortices. Then there are Majorana modes that run along the vertex line. So here in two dimension, the Majorana mode is there around the core. Now in three dimensional, when I have a vertex line, I have a line and the Majorana modes run, they form band of Majorana modes. This was discovered by Wolowick many, many years ago.
Okay. So in the picture that we are looking at now,
it's a two dimensional superconductor. It's a planar superconductor.
And we have a line.
No, we have a point. So yeah, exactly. So the topological singularity
is codimension two, like in the 3D case that you were saying?
Correct. So you can say it's a point singularity.
Okay.
This is analog of, for example, dislocations. In crystal physics, you learn, suppose you have an ordered crystal. Suppose I walk along the line that I have a lattice point. Then I can insert a half plane. It's called edge dislocation. Now, how do I sense it? If I locally, I cannot see it. Then if I walk around and pick up, I will pick up what's called Berger's vector. I walk left, so because there is a missing thing line here. So this is a topological defect. So here, it's in real space, and the order parameter is related to crystallinity. Here, the order parameter is related to phase order. Okay, so now I wanted. Now I'm basically I have completed whatever I wanted to do with respect to superconductor. If you have any questions, I will proceed next to you.
Just briefly, can you move here? Me? Hello? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, perfect. Just quickly with the spontaneous symmetry breaking and the U1 Mexican hat potential, is that directly related to the phase number fluctuation that you were mentioning earlier? So once we choose a phase, then there are no more phase fluctuations, but we have number fluctuations?
So, as I said, in the case of superconductor, number, the total number of electrons in a small volume, is no more a conserved quantity. It undergoes quantum coherent fluctuations. So, because of that, you say that number is not a good variable to describe, phase is a good variable to describe a superconducting state. And that was all mathematically brought out in the BCS and Bogoliubov theory by introducing order parameter. I do not know if I remember. In BCS theory, when you do Bogoliubov theory, this has so-called anomalous value. So it's called anomalous average because in an ordinary metal, this should vanish because when it is acting, it violates number conservation. But however, in a superconductor, since you allow for coherent number fluctuations through Cooper pairing, this is non-zero. Now, it is this which contains a phase and amplitude. So, the number phase uncertainty relation is for this Cooper pair operator. So, this is analog of A naught in the case of boson. In the case of bosons, we had Bose condensation in zero momentum state of a Bose mode of helium 4 atom, for example. Here, there is a Bose condensation of a pair of electrons, the spin singlet state with zero momentum. So, we talk about number phase uncertainty for Cooper pairs. And what is interesting is, even though the number of electrons is very large, the Cooper pairs effectively that are there in a superconductor is only about 1% of the number of carriers. That is because of the energy scale associated with superconductivity is very tiny compared to Fermi energy, which is of the order of electron volt. And energy scale associated with Cooper pairing is few milli electron volt. 1 milli electron volt is of like 10 Kelvin. So does that answer your question, Anna?
Yes, it's me. I think so. Thank you.
Okay. That was Anna, right?
Yes.
Okay. So, please, ask me questions if you have, because I'm sure there are many, many questions because I'm intuitively indicating several, because this is something very important, because this is something that some of you can work through the paper by Ivanov. Suppose you have a P-wave superconductor. Suppose you create a vortex. He showed beautifully there is a bound state at zero energy. It's called the zero mode, which is a Majorana fermion. And then, in other context, it was discovered by Krishnendu Sengupta and his supervisor at Maryland. Forget the name, Landau School. So they showed that if you take a P-wave superconductor and have a domain wall, there could be Majorana mode running along the domain wall. Here it is localized. Anyway, Yakovenko and Krishnendu Sengupta. Okay, so the next thing I wanted to do is, so we have discussed BCS instability and Bose-Einstein condensation, superfluid instability. There are few other instabilities which are important in quantum matter. And one such instability is so-called Pyle's instability or dimerization instability, through which I will approach this topological insulator idea. Because as you know, in the last few decades, the idea of topological insulator has become extremely important. And there is one dear model, simple model, which can illustrate the basic idea very beautifully. This is called Su-Schrieffer-Hegar model. How many of you have heard about Su-Schrieffer-Hegar model? SSH, okay. So it's a very simple model which can be explained. It was developed in the context of a very beautiful organic polymer called polyacetylene. But even before that, this kind of idea came from Piles, who, based on very general argument, predicted existence of some instability in electron gas in one dimension. Okay. So now I'm going to enumerate some of the instabilities that we will be discussing, because they are all important in the context of quantum information. Because superconducting instability leads to vertices. Vertices become home for Majorana's fermions, for example, in this context. Similarly, if you take a p-wave superconducting wire, the edges become home for Majorana fermion. And then if you look at quantum Hall state, there are other anions that come in a very beautiful way as topological defects or excitations. So it's important to think about simple instabilities and understand them clearly. Yes.
So I just have to understand, because you said it could be like an exercise to show that the Majorana involvement is from this thing. To do that, like, you minimize the energy in terms of the
things. Couple it to the fermions. At the moment, Ginzburg-Landau theory hit the fermions, because they said I can only focus on order, superconducting order parameter. I don't have more energy. So then Gorkov came, thanks to the BCS theory. He said that you can get a generalized Ginzburg-Landau theory in which the order parameter is also coupled to the quasi particles, fermionic quasi particles. Exactly, there is a Hamiltonian. That's called Nambu-Gorkov Hamiltonian. Sorry, I don't have time to go into it. There is a Hamiltonian for it. In fact, I should also mention, this is also true in the case of ferromagnet, because there are insulating ferromagnets and conducting ferromagnets. For example, if we take iron, it's a ferromagnet, which is a metal. So there is not only magnetization degree of freedom, but also conduction electrons are moving. So they get influence. In fact, the whole field of spintronics is related to that. How magnetism influences carriers. It could be in insulators, it could be in semiconductors, or it could be in metal. And you can dynamically influence, like, you know, if a domain wall moves, that produces some current in some unexpected direction. And all kinds of beautiful devices and quantum phenomena happens. So fermions have been suppressed by Ginzburg and Landau by hand for convenience. Then you cannot do it. There are situations where they become important. So I will discuss about one instability in some detail, which is called Pyle's instability. Then SSH model, a topological perspective, and both of them are related to quasi one-dimensional electron system. You know that the metal that we normally come across are three-dimensional, copper, aluminium, and so on. But there are polymeric chains. Also, there are man-made situations where you can confine electrons to move along a chain in one direction, or you can confine to move them in a plane. So their mathematics will look like particles living in a quasi one-dimensional world or two-dimensional world. And as you go from three to two to one dimension, physics changes and becomes even richer in some sense. So Pyle's is an amazing book. He said that if you think about free Fermi gas in one dimension, there is an inherent instability in the system. The system will not remain a metal. That's called Pyle's instability. Even before Pyle's, great Wigner based on different consideration, came to some similar consideration. They're called Wigner crystal. That's very, you know, worth thinking about. See, Wigner is famous for his intuitive work. He is the one who predicted that solid hydrogen, when you apply pressure, will become a metal at 25 kilobar, 25 gigapascal. This was a prediction by Wigner and Huntington well before many body theory came. He gave very simple arguments. In fact, that has opened the field of metallic hydrogen and now room temperature superconductivity in hydrogen-rich material. So in the same way, Wigner said, suppose I consider electron gas in this room. Assume there is some gallium or a positive background which keeps it neutral. Then I expand the electron gas. I decrease the density. What will happen if I consider Coulomb repulsion? Wigner immediately argued that they will form an electron crystal. This is something counterintuitive, because normally when you think about electrons, you think about them moving in plane waves or in block states and forming Fermi C. But as you decrease the density of the electron, Wigner argued there is a competition between kinetic energy in a Fermi state and potential energy coming from Coulomb repulsion. He said at some point, the Fermi C loses and it has to organize and lose its momentum, and electrons have to get localized like pockets, forming what is called a Wigner crystal. And this is Wigner crystal. Why I am bringing in and just indicating to you is there are possibilities of qubits coming from Wigner crystals, because recently there has been proposal that if you take liquid helium-4 and spray some electrons on top of the surface of helium-4, they can form Wigner crystals, and the quantum dynamics of individual electrons can be used as qubits and so on. So I'm not going to the thermodynamics, I'm just telling novel quantum possibilities in quantum matter. One is Wigner crystal. Now we will discuss a well-known case of what is called the Pyle's insularity. The argument of Pyle's goes like this. Let me consider electrons moving in one dimension. This is a dispersion, epsilon k, free electrons. Then I have a Fermi momentum. And things are filled up to this. So Pyle's argued that the system is unstable, and what will happen is it will open up a gap at the Fermi level by modification of the underlying lattice. Because when you have a fermion in one dimension, the electrons are moving in some lattice. There are some atoms which have provided the electron. So he argued, to put it in the modern language, that it will undergo a lattice distortion with a wave vector which is q. That means the corresponding wavelength is 2 pi by q. Pyle's argument is very simple. Electrons are not free because they are coupled to lattice vibrations. So he argued that when I look at this system, I can transfer an electron from here to here or here to here, and the change in momentum is 2 kF, but the change in energy is 0. So there is a large momentum transfer possibility here with zero energy change. So that means such excitations could be copiously produced in the ground state in the presence of interaction, and they could condense. That was the simple idea. And why did he say that? He said that he focused on a model, what's called tight bending model of electron. Imagine there is some orbital, one electron which is hopping. On an average, there is one electron per cell. Okay? The band structure will be a simple band like this, sine band. And since I am considering one electron per cell, there is up and down spin electron, it will be half filled. Since I am getting into others' time, I will just indicate to you and then go to the mathematics next time. Pyle said that In this particular case of half-filled band, the solid will undergo what is called dimerization. Spontaneously, they will form pairs with alternate. So the periodicity of electron will go from A to 2A. That's it. So he just gave some energetic arguments to show that one-dimensional electron gas will be unstable, and it will form a periodic charge density wave. And in fact, in the hands of Frolich, he did a mathematics of that. In the general case, he called as sliding charge density, and he gave it as a mechanism for superconductivity before BCS theory. So all these stories I will tell next time and do some mathematics. I will stop here. Yeah. Sorry?
What is Q?
It's a wave vector. So, let me repeat it. What I said was, I can take an electron from here and transfer it here. What is the energy changes? Zero, because I'm going from Fermi momentum to Fermi momentum. But there is a large momentum change. I'm going from Kf to minus Kf, so net momentum change is 2Kf. So, let me call that as capital Q. So, that means the system will singularly respond to perturbation with this wave vector. So, one of the perturbations that is possible is lattice vibrations with that wave vector. And if you look at the eigenvector, that corresponds to this distortion. So, Pyles argued it will self-consistently undergo dimerization, it will become an insulator. I will show it explicitly using again a Hartree-Fock theory in the next class, and then go to Schiefer-Hegel model, which brings in the idea of topological states, edge states, mid-gap states, and so on. That's what I will do day after tomorrow.